In this podcast, we're going to cover the good old galvanometer, the school standard way of measuring very small currents. Another way would be a needle fine current gauge, or galvanometer. This particular explains where I discuss things scientific. In this one, it's not a complicated podcast. I'm just covering a standard piece of probably out-of-date equipment. In this digital age, to measure very tiny currents, there's various chips that we would use nowadays and just measure and take off the digital output for very small currents. But indeed, this is what's been handed to us and has been in school laboratories, and it's a very good hands-on way of seeing forces at work. So without further ado, I'll just go basically into it. So the galvanometer is a very sensitive electromotive force detector. So it's basically a force, a spring balance, and it measures a force which is generated proportional to a current, because the force is proportional to the current, and the angle is proportional to the force. The angle is proportional to the current. Therefore, I can read off the angle deflection. The deflection is generally is a clockwise deflection, zero on the left and on the right hand side. A scale unit. So let's go through describing the various parts of the galvanometer. Now, if I had the galvanometer in front of me, I would actually identify the different parts for you in front, name the parts, and then go through the interconnection and function of them. Unfortunately, because this is a podcast, the view is in your head. I have to name each part, describe its function as we go through. Now, obviously, it's going to be best if you've had experience of a galvanometer or have a diagram pulled up in front of you from the internet or something like that to see it, played around with it first. In general, that's what you'd do. In school, you would have a galvanometer and just put it in a circuit without words, demonstrate what's going on and explain what's going on. If it's standard sort of weapons lesson type of description. So starting off, we have the back board with the scale board with a mirror on it with numbers on it and a scale which shows the angle deflection of a needle. A black needle goes in front of the board and down to an axis, and the needle goes between a range of angles. The left-hand angle indicating zero force, and a calibrated range of forces up to the right-hand side. In general, the way that would operate is that for a real galvanometer, you would put a known current in for a known angle, record that angle, rather than anything else like that. Or if it's printed, you'd have everything precision built with an adjustment, a spring adjustment, so you adjust the force. The force is F equals K alpha and F equals I N B alpha, or B area. There's no angle. The angle is designed out of the galvanometer, so it's an angle independent force measurement. So that's the art of the construction, which distinguishes it from a DC motor, where the motor is angle dependent, and the idea is there is to actually convert the force into torque. Here, the torque is just a byproduct which we measure. So we've got the needle going into the axis, the axle. The axle is generally on a very small bearing or needles held together. So there is a very small resistance associated with it, and the needle has got a rest position of zero angular force, and the angle to force is given by some hair springs, helical hair springs, helical snail like. And so your typical spring will, if you grab it and pull it out with a pair of pliers, I don't recommend doing it, will be up to 30 centimetres even. About 30 centimetres long, wound around, very small wind, and go around probably 6, 15 times around in the front and the back. There'll be one clockwise and one anti-clockwise, and that's designed for temperature compensation between the two. And these springs also have a secondary thing, is that they take in the current for the purposes of this demonstration, or visualization. We're going to have the positive terminal at the front spring, so the current will flow from the front spring to the back spring via an internal group of loops around a central drum. You can see I'm saying this fast because I've been interrupted twice before in this by, I don't know if you followed the last podcast, I got phoned up, I was going to have an INR, and then this nurse appeared from nowhere to visit me at my home up in the Blue Mountains, rather, well, and interrupted my last podcast. But getting back to it, we've got the current coming in through the front spring into the axis, picked off by a wire and then going around very thin wire. The wire can be very thin, high resistance, because the power output is I squared R. I is very small, and square it's even smaller still, so you can have very high resistance. So this is a reduced weight. The increased weight means that there is more inertia, rotational inertia, for when you do give a current, you have the effect of a mass, a spring, and you also require damping. So typically this goes around at least 100 times, up to 300 times, depending on your meter. And the idea is by going around several times, you get to the N. Just going over again the formula, N is the number of spins around the track, around your drum. So it comes around, goes through the central axis, turns right, goes down the height, goes around the back of the drum, comes towards us on the left-hand side and continues around a cycle and eventually finishes up at the back of the drum and forward onto the rear spring, which is hooked up to our negative terminal. So those springs will eventually be hooked by wires up to the front into banana clip holders for your, or plug holders for your wires to go into your galvanometer. The drum itself is said in Australian textbooks without fail to be an iron core. This is on the belief that the great effect of actually pulling in field lines, I hate to say it that way, it's a bit of a misnomer, or directing, increasing the effectiveness of the field lines, the flux, the bat. So you, in a DC motor, you pay for the magnet. It physically costs stuff in dollars to put in there. It physically costs stuff in weight. So if you're putting the motor in a Scalex car, so you want to actually amplify the amount of current or flux going through, suck in the flux, magnetic flux. So that's why you have an iron core. There's no such need for it in a galvanometer. In fact, the actual central drum is aluminium because it's light, aluminium because it's high conductivity. You want the high conductivity because the movement of the drum in the magnetic field will create eddy currents which will act as a damping. So the drum has got the effect of damping. That's in none of the textbooks that I've seen. But if you just look, I don't know what happens, you just look at a galvanometer and you see the central axis is all shiny, looks like aluminium, is aluminium. And if you read the specs are all aluminium. So that's the central drum that you should refer to. And so this is essentially got all the mechanical bits that move and the electrics which come in. But now for the magnetic field. The magnetic field is a shaped magnetic field. It's not a transverse magnetic field. It's a radial magnetic field. So magnetic field lines in the left upper quadrant, you go to the right upper quadrant, but heading towards zero. So they go down at an angle towards zero, bend at the last moment and come up, so the magnetic field effectively is concentrated. So as far as the coil is concerned, there is a constant magnetic field independent of radius, and if you stuck your ruler across a line looking at those magnetic field lines, that would be bending in. Once you got in much past the radius of the coil, that'd start to bend, but for that point they're effectively a linear constant current. So there is a shaped magnetic field line. So the magnetic field line is, the magnetics are typically drawn north to the left and south to the right. So they start at the left and go to the right with an arrow on them. Now we have the current, as we've established, is on the left-hand side of the drum facing towards us. So it circulates the drum. It's coming towards us using the right-hand slap rule. In Australia, at least, we stick with a trio of right-hand rules. Right-hand because it, you know, don't muck with it. And so we have the right-hand grip rule. That is the wires, if I have current going in the direction of my thumb, the magnetic field lines generated, that will be a circle which of your fingers which go around, then your right hand slap rule, that is your thumb is in the direction of the current, your fingers are in the direction of the field, and the way that your hand naturally applies force is the direction of the force. Applying this in this particular case, we have and there's another variation of that for getting out the direction of field lines and a direction of field lines from a solenoid. We won't go into that. So your fingers go from left with your right hand, go from the left to the right. So your fingers left to right, your thumb is pointing towards you. So it's, you often see people in exams at a particular point put down their pens and do all these sorts of yoga positions. But the effect of this is this will apply a torque, a force upwards on at the left. So this is a torque which, seen in the page, will be anti-clockwise, and there will be a restoring force K alpha. So K alpha, well, alpha is your angle of deflection. K alpha equals NB I area. That takes care of all the length and torque factors associated with it, using just the area. But there's no sign, theta, or anything like that, because we are dealing with a specifically constructed or cos theta if it's in a motor, because we've got a designer or special magnetic field which gives us a constant torque as angle. And so cancel everything else out. You have a whole series of constants which involve the spring constant, the area, and the area and the strength of the magnetic field. So obviously your magnets have to be built up over time, and this means that I is some sort of I is proportional to the angle, and you measure off the angle. So some things that can vary with it is that you have a zeroing error. This is where the scale is adjusted to the zero, so you can have a zero adjust knob which applies a rotation of the start of your spring going in, and as your magnets age, so with the older iron core magnets they would age, the more modern neodymium ceramic nanomaterial super magnets don't tend to age. It depends how old the stuff you have in your school. So often when you get some very old equipment, you switch it on, the things need to be adjusted. So that basically concludes, if you go through that time and time again and write that out, you'll be often asked to draw a label diagram and describe the function of a galvanometer. And essentially, there's insufficient science to... So your entry point of science to explain why you're allowed to actually say, I nominate the electromotive force effect, the motor effect. Basically, it's an HSE marker. You just look for the term motor effect. And whether they understand it or not, it's assumed that if they've written motor effect, they understand that. But as far as you're concerned, you have to, as soon as you see the word galvanometer and diagram, just write the word motor effect. Then you have your overall diagram right. Even if you can't draw the circuit, write a circuit to show, and the flow of current. So if you just say circuit current flow, you really should put an arrow on your circuit to indicate a current flow, and label magnetic field. So you've got to have the basic things: current, magnetic field, spring, angle, reading and measurement, and the effect. The purpose of a galvanometer is to measure current by measuring at angle. This is just a very quick podcast intended for people studying their HSC or their last year of school who want to brush up on galvanometers. There's nothing more on that. The only thing I'll do to conclude for teachers who are teaching galvanometers, it's best if you've got two... There are two points I want to put forward. Is for 2 points for galvanometers is to hook the terminals together of a galvanometer in a circle. So your positive to the negative, and the negative to the positive of two galvanometers. And if you have one galvanometer and you rock it from side to side, the generator effect of it being rocked from side to side, so rocking from side to side, the internal drum will have an inertia, and this will cause the needle on the other galvanometer to slave. In best that there is your positive current only galvanometer, you also have a center zero galvanometer, that is, it can take positive and negative currents. And so in general, it's best for the more sensitive center zero galvanometer to use that for that demonstration. Now, the galvanometer itself is a subcomponent of some other physics components, which is the ammeter and the voltmeter. The ammeter has a shunt conductor, this is something which is treated as a resistor. It's a very low resistance, and the galvanometer has a high resistance, therefore it takes only a small fraction of the current, a known fraction of the current in proportional to the resistances, and therefore you can measure 1 amp with as a galvanometer which can measure a microamp, but with a shunt conductor across it. So it's in parallel with a shunt conductor. So most of the electricity goes through here. So the galvanometer now takes on as taking a minute sample of current, say a thousandth or a ten thousandth of the total current going through, and it's measured. So the introduction of a ammeter into a circuit is the introduction of a very small, insignificant resistance, but nonetheless it is a resistance which affects the theoretically affects the results, and also understanding of the correct shunt resistor to use. Again, if you have an unknown current and you're measuring, you measure from high current working down to low current. if you put too much of a current through a galvanometer, it will simply burn the heritage wire inside it like a fuse. Similarly, a voltmeter is in series. It's got a resistor, and a voltmeter is measured used in parallel around a resistor, and again it measures a tiny amount of current across something, but that is calculated by the resistor is a very high resistance compared to the voltmeter itself, so the voltmeter can be reduced. The current across the resistor, if it's a very high resistor, mega ohms, so to speak, that will be V equals IR. So V on R equals I, and you can measure the I with your ammeter. And this is done across. So just to summarise for the teacher, additional knowledge to put in is the twin zero-centre galvanometers. In general, in exams, for some reason, they don't like zero-centre galvanometers, but indeed that's the one that you would most commonly use. You wouldn't have to, therefore, you don't have to worry about the sign of what's going across. You get two zero-centre galvanometers and hook them together. One is a motor and a generator. A general effect to ask people to explain what's going on in the class. And then the further understanding of the application of galvanometers in the exploration of DC circuits. There's an AC modification, which we won't go into here, and covering again in the DC circuits, the galvanometer is in parallel with a shunt conductor, which is put in series in the circuit, whereas in the voltmeter the galvanometer is in series with a resistance, a large resistance, and that's put in parallel in the circuit. That pretty well covers it. Again, for testing yourself, you should just routinely draw this out. I would recommend once a day and score yourself until it's perfect, and then lock it away with a test every week, a routine test every week, and make sure you're ready for exams. Thanks for listening. This is Peter Hill Explains.